Today we are talking about GLACA, normal, ASA. We are going to talk a little bit about Measure D, Zazz, the pot vending machine that's coming out up in Seattle, as well as security in dispensaries. We are the Cannalinguists. I am Alex Mandelberg. With me, my awesome and always amazing co-host, April O'Connor.
Hello.
And our guest today, the founder at Perennial Holistics, the founder of Holistic Sam's, as well as the host of the Canna News and Canna Mundo. Give it up, ladies and gentlemen, for Sam Hamid. They're going crazy, Sam. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, brother. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I'm excited to have you in here. For our listeners, Sam is the founder of Perennial, which a lot of people have heard me talk about before, because everyone hears how much I'm always smoking Phyllis Diller, because it's, you know, just my
it's the best.
But people know of Sam very well. People don't know about Holistic Sam's. That one I haven't talked about. We were talking pre-show. Holistic Sam's is an edible company,
right?
That you do. They make a lot of wonderful things. Their fish crackers are amazing, mm-hmm. but they make a Lucidae brownie.
Now that's not what it's called, I'm assuming.
It's called the Lucidae Brownie.
Well, the name suits it.
The name suits it. It's a wonderful product. It's made with, I believe,
hash.
Yeah, but how usually
each brownie has a gram of hash.
Oh, about yeah.
A gram. And me and a fellow comedian, we had some on a ride into the hotel. We knew we were about 10 minutes from the hotel, and we went, okay, let's take it now, and that way when we get to the hotel, it'll kick in, and we'll be great. And we get a phone call literally as we swallow our bite of brownie from the booker, who goes, I need you guys to swing by the venue real quick, pick up some stuff, and then you guys can go back to the hotel. And we're like, oh, jeez. okay. And we get to the venue, and we're going downstairs, and it hits both of us at the same time. We're like, there it is. And
Felix.
Yeah, to say the least, we were there for like a half an hour. We were going to try and drive to the hotel, which was two blocks away. We were way too scared to drive. We're like, nope, this is not going to work. We tried. I remember at one point we're like, no, we're going to move the car. And we put it in a parking spot. And then we're like, no, this is the wrong parking structure for the hotel that we wanted. We circled the blocks two more times, and then we parked in the same spot that we were in before, and we're like, okay, we need to stop driving, and we grabbed all the stuff out of the car and just walked to the hotel from there. So yeah, Holistic Sam, Lucidae Brownie, they are awesome.
I appreciate
very awesome
that.
Very awesome stuff.
That so, is the best name ever.
It is the best name for a product in the world.
Gee, how did you come up with that? No, I'm just kidding. I forget.
But starting off, so you told me you were just on a SoCal tour, four counties,
four cities. We went to West Hollywood, Santa Ana, San Diego, and who's the fourth city? I don't want to leave anyone out. I can't remember. It was such a long day. Santa Ana, I just said that one.
Yeah.
San Diego, West Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
San Diego. So those four cities, and Riverside.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a big. Yeah, that's a lot of territory.
It was a lot. Like that is 600 miles in 2 days. It was.
Oh wow! Oh, you did this in 2 days.
Oh yeah,
and one day for San Diego. And this is with Normal.
With Normal, ASA, Americans for Safe Access, and GLACA, Greater Los Angeles Collective Alliance.
Awesome. Do you want to give our listeners and my co-hosts a little bit of background on?
Yeah. So Americans for Safe Access is a national organization fighting for the protection of medical marijuana rights for medical marijuana patients. Normal is a long-running organization, the National Organization of Marijuana Reform?
Marijuana Law Reform.
Law Reform, there we go.
Yeah.
It's an acronym, comes out as Normal. GLACA is the country's oldest, longest-running medical marijuana trade organization. And so collectively, we're all making sure that in this new push for legalization in 2016, that medical marijuana is addressed and that we preserve medical marijuana rights for the patients. We don't make the same mistakes that Colorado and or Washington did with their respective markets.
Now, that was something we were talking about a little bit pre-show about, you know, the mistakes that you feel have been made in either of these places, because I told I've told April a few times about when I went up to Washington and we went into a legal recreational dispensary up there and we paid
$90
for 2 grams.
Holy cow. Right.
I mean, it was good, but it was, I mean, $90, 2 grams, good. That was right. Ridiculous. And the way it was explained to us was that so many people did not want to go on the books growing for the state. They were having a hard time finding growers who were willing to grow for recreational purposes, and thusly the supply was just so low. Whereas conversely, though, I don't know. See, Colorado, I don't know as much about what they've done in Colorado. What I do know is the article that I read that apparently the tax revenue has been through the roof. They're yeah. really happy with how much money the state's making.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I don't know what else is going on. Well, other than crime's down.
The difference was that Colorado went, you know, and just kind of added to what they already had, and then Washington built theirs separately from the ground up. Right. So it took forever.
So, okay, so if I'm to understand, basically, if you were a medical dispensary in Colorado, you now could just sell recreationally.
Correct.
And that's all fine. But if you were a medical shop in Washington, could you continue being a medical shop?
You have to choose one or the other.
You have to choose one or the other, and you can't do both. I do remember because when it came to the recreational, we couldn't even buy a pipe on the same cash register that we were buying our legal right. pot on.
Right.
It all had to be separate.
It's different taxes.
Well, the tax rate in Washington is collectively 75%. It's the grower pays a 25% tax. The manufacturer, the person who processes the finished product, pays a 25% tax. And then the distributor, the dispensary, pays a 25% tax.
Fucking A.
Right. So that's why 2 grams is $90.
Wow. That's a lot of tax.
And the black market.
A lot of hands in the cookie jar.
The black market is very healthy in Washington.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, it would seem to make sense if that's the case.
Right.
I mean, I would certainly understand why it would be so strong down there. Well, now, when you talk about California, though, I remember you were saying California's rush to legalization, because it does seem like California does want to get on the legalization train.
Yes.
What would make you happy then to see what would happen in legalization in California?
Something similar to what they have in Colorado, where you have a diminished, if not zero, tax on medical marijuana. Patients who really need it are really still getting it and using it properly. And the recreational market can open up to a fair tax rate. And it can be a statewide thing where the city gets – each individual city gets a piece of the pie. If they choose to get involved.
Like what is that? The Measure M is for Los Angeles?
Right, or Proposition D.
Prop D.
Measure M converted into Proposition D, which is a 6% tax on medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Okay, and is that money already allocated out as to what that would be spent on, or is it just that's what the tax will be?
The 6% is going to be spent on any sort of enforcement of medical marijuana within the city. So make sure
okay. that the city it pays for itself
right.
is the idea, is that we're not going to have to spend tax money in the state of California
right.
on patrolling medical marijuana shops. They pay that themselves through their own taxes.
Exactly.
Well, that actually makes a ton of sense.
Right.
Why are you guys going to make so much sense? That's my problem, is when it's broke down so logically for me that I go, okay, cool. Why isn't everyone on board? What aren't you telling me?
Well, the problem
with California. What are you lying to me about, Sam?
Are
why
you,
I can't believe you.
Too?
We were involved with the UFCW for a little bit, the UFC Local 770.
Yeah.
They're the ones in Southern California. We attempted to unionize. It didn't come to fruition in our store.
Right.
But a number of stores have. But I don't know that they're still full speed on.
Yeah, I know that they helped draft what became Measure D, right?
Right.
It was like a lot of the, you know, the city took a lot of their, you know, their vocabulary and the way that they.
Right. Well, between ASA and the UFCW and GLACA and whatnot, the collective organizations helped guide where the law was going to go. The UFCW gave the government that the trusted cousin oversight. It's not just a bunch of hippies trying to legalize weed. It's now the union is involved, and they're at least they have some sort of history.
Well, that always seems to be the big push with at least more recently, is that, you know, we're trying to push away almost from having the Tommy Chongs and those type be our representatives, because we love you, Tommy. I really do. But we need the businessman in the suit right now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we need to show that, you know, not only are people using this for medical purposes, but also this is a good way for the state to make a little bit of extra cash.
Absolutely.
And I've always said I was so thrilled the first time I went into a legal dispensary and they charged me tax. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was so happy.
Right.
Like, yeah, heck yeah. Heck yeah. Me paying this money to the state means I don't have to worry about having this on me.
Right.
So
exactly.
I'm all for it. All for paying my taxes on my pot. And I talked before about, I remember I had toyed with the idea of jumping into politics.
Huh.
And
I'd vote for you.
Oh, thank you. I checked out some dispensaries that were in a district that I was looking at that I was thinking, maybe I'll run for city council in this district. And more than half the dispensaries I went to, just I go in the back and they just had a trash bag of weed sitting underneath the desk.
Right.
No, they didn't even know what they had, what the measurements were, how much they were charging, all cash business. And I went,
right. No, I understand.
How am I supposed to represent you?
Right.
How am I supposed to put my neck on the line so that you can do your job if you're not going to be honest with me?
Right.
And I know that that's something that, you know, your store specifically is always, you know, listen, one of the few stores that you can use a card in.
Right.
And I'm sure that that's because you keep accurate books and you always know what you have
Absolutely.
In the back. And that seems to be the important thing that gets forgotten a lot. And everyone kind of thinks it's the hippie culture. I think that's what middle America thinks it is. It's the hippie culture who's just keeping trash bags of weed underneath a desk. And someone comes in with 20 bucks and they hand them a bag.
With no offense to anybody in the marijuana industry, though, there is that contingent of operator that's out there.
Oh, yeah. You've got to
consider that this is still federally illegal under Schedule 1 to operate a dispensary and to be a legal dispensary in Los Angeles today. You had to be willing to risk everything back in 2006.
Oh, yeah. So and they rip it all from you, rob you, and then you have to have something, you know, in a mattress somewhere to build up again or you're done.
Right.
So if you don't mind me asking, when were you first allowed to have a bank account for your business?
I've had one since the first day.
Okay.
A lot of these places that are having trouble, I don't know why they're having trouble.
Because they probably are too detailed. You know? You're like, I have an herbal pharmacy.
Right.
Well, I guess that's another way to do it, you know? But yeah, I always wonder because we talked about – that was something that was in a past episode that we talked about was, you know, now they're finally willing to give business loans to some of these places.
That's a new thing. That was a tough one. I've still yet to see that happen.
Yeah.
That's not venture capital or some sort of discrete.
And but no, it's not necessarily business loans. It's been just like that they're willing to work with them. You know, I mean, some banks were giving porn stars a hard time not that long ago. Do you remember?
I heard those stories. I've definitely heard those stories.
I want to know what your opinion is on Measure D and its efficacy thus far.
Measure D was almost a meritocracy. It gave people the opportunity to say enough's enough for the dispensaries. There's one on every block and this has gotten out of control.
Yeah.
At some point.
They said more than McDonald's and Starbucks combined.
Combined at one point. Yeah, it was insane. So basically they came down to the resolution that we understand that you were at one point possibly breaking the law. There was no law to break. You were just doing something brazen.
Brave, I'd say.
And brave. I take definitely some bravery in that. However, in 2007, the city council recognized that there was something going on and they put a moratorium in place and said, that's it. Enough is enough until we get a handle of what's happening.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I was one of those brazen few that was opened up in 2006 and a handful of others opened in 2007. Everybody else has opened up blatantly against the law because they know that the city had its pants down. They don't have the money for the taxes. They don't have the money for the enforcement.
Did the hardship license like loophole thing. Where it was like, oh, well, we'll give you a license until we can review it and then
they stack up and they can't review you for 3 years. And by that point, you know, who cares? Whatever. We'll shut it down and get out of here.
And plus the city at the Office of Finance was handing out in what we call a business license in Los Angeles. It's nothing more than a certificate allowing you to pay tax. But we call that a business license in Los Angeles. And the city of Office
like
of Finance.
Like a seller's permit.
Yeah, essentially. And this Office of Finance was handing those out left and right because their job is to just collect tax. If somebody wants to operate a business, their job is to collect tax from that business. Mm-hmm. It's not their job to question what kind of business, where it's going, what it's doing, so on and so forth. So,
you know, it's like I said, it's a fine print.
Yeah.
It's like it's how you offer that information up and it's all based on interpretation. If you're just like, I'm going to sell – not. They're like, no, no. <All right.
laughs> And a lot of it's communication between the city attorney and the different offices and whatnot. And it's they're working on it. They're doing better at it.
I've seen some closings occur. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sucks for the people that got in on the tail end that, you know, are actually popular good dispensaries, but the ones that have been that I've been around and survived the flood, you know, they've did everything they're supposed to be around. So right. I don't know. I like that I'm seeing some places close, but then I still turn around and see other places opening up.
Every day.
Like,
yeah,
what the fuck is going on?
It is. I of the eight dispensaries that were within three blocks of my old apartment, I remember, I think only one of them is still open. Mm-hmm. And now where I live, I mean, I will admit I was kind of sick and tired of seeing them on every corner. Yeah. And I love smoking, obviously, but it did get to a point where it was too much. And there was a lot of that, how do I say, quantity over quality,
right?
Yeah.
Going on.
And then Measure D helped, you know, impose like a sort of zoning, right? For like not near schools and not near, you know, any like drug rehab centers. And there's a whole bunch of.
Yeah, you can't be around any sensitive use areas. No schools, no parks, no libraries, houses of worship, things of that nature.
Yeah. I know you guys, you guys are a good two blocks away from I think it would be the closest school. It would be Carpenter.
Right. And we're 1,056 feet from that. Like the circle actually comes across. Where the street is.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, there used to be a porno store next door to me. So they already did all the work. As soon as I'm like, oh, they're clearly, if they can be here, I can be here. And it worked.
That was smart thinking on
that
your
is,
part.
Wow. That is brilliant. Because you've been in the same location all the way for eight.
No, we were in Sherman Oaks to start, and then we got shut down by the DEA like everybody else did in 2007 with landlord seizure letters. And then we reopened in our Studio City location.
Okay, so that's the one that I've driven by before.
It's a wonderful place.
It's on Ventura, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty neat experience. And it started from a little tiny little spot. Now it's 2,200 square feet. You can walk through an actual functioning grow room on your way to the dispensary floor.
That's awesome.
And see the whole process start to finish.
It's pretty amazing. I do remember when it was just the one place. I remember when you guys knocked the wall down and when you were building everything up. It's been pretty awesome to see where it comes from. And now it really has grown into, as I describe it to people, what you would hope a marijuana buying experience would be.
Right.
A comfortable waiting room, clean surroundings.
And professional, knowledgeable staff,
people willing to answer questions, and a great selection of flowers and edibles and drinks
that,
and
though,
everything else.
Beyond all that, though, it's really about the community relation. Anybody can have a nice, fancy, clean dispensary with a knowledgeable staff, but if you're not involved with your community surrounding you, you're still something taboo, kind of an eyesore to
society. Well, I know I know a few of them, but why don't you explain what are some of the community things that you've done?
For instance, I ran for neighborhood council. I lost, but I got more votes than some of the incumbents.
Okay.
But upon losing, though, I was offered a position or a seat at the public safety committee. So I got to hang out with the police on a regular basis and the city prosecutor, and we talked about all these issues. I was on the medical marijuana dispensary advisory committee and like all these things to like prove that it's not us versus them. It's together we're trying to make a new industry.
It sounds like the key is always transparency, transparency,
absolutely,
transparency. Just be willing to share what's going on. Don't hide anything.
Again, the talent pool of people willing to do this, though, is very limited. You have people who've lived in the shadows for so long, given the opportunity to have a dispensary. Mm-hmm. They're not really ready to go glad hand with all the politicians and the police and everything else. I come from a history of financial planning and fundraising for nonprofits. I was never in the drug industry per se.
Okay.
So I don't have this reluctance. I'm very open to go, hey, you know what? This is what we do. This is a dispensary. These are people who are sick. Look at my patients. They're all 40 plus seniors and this, that, and the other thing. There's no kids walking in and out of my shop.
And then like the crime goes down in the neighborhoods because usually you have like armed security. Do you have an armed security guard or do you have a – do you guys have
sharks with lasers.
with freaking laser beams.
Freaking laser beams attached to their freaking heads.
Some people don't do the guards, or they do. Sometimes they don't do the armed guards. And
well, that you know that is an interesting question because I've been to dispensaries that have armed guards. I've been to dispensaries that don't.
And I've been to ones that don't have anything at all.
Yeah, it's that's the worst.
But a big bald Russian, and I guess that's security all in one.
You know, it's an interesting conversation.
In my first shop, I had no security. It was just me and a stick. And it was just in an office building, just me and a counter, and I sold weed.
Dude, that's brave, though. It's very brave. That's balls. Because, I mean, you know that most people are appreciative, and they're there. You know, they're appreciative to have this opportunity to be able to get medicine. Right. And then, you know, there's other people.
I mean, one of the few other dispensaries I'll go to, because I only go to two dispensaries. I go to D9 and I go to Perennial. The only two dispensaries that I like. When I go there, though, you walk into a cage and you get checked in by a guy who has a gun on his hip wearing a giant security thing. And there's that weird feeling that you get where you're like, okay, if there's a guy in here with a gun, it means he's not the first guy who came in here with a gun.
Right.
And suddenly this thing that, you know, I'll admit, I don't know how often these places get robbed. I don't know if it's like liquor stores. I really honestly do not. I definitely know, though, that when there's a gun present, I do understand that now I feel safe that if something were to happen while I was here, someone could handle it. But I've become a lot more aware of the fact that something could happen.
When I worked downtown, there was a girl that was she was a bud tender.
Which, by the way, we've hit the 20-minute mark.
There was a girl that was
missing the 20-minute mark.
There was a girl that was a bud tender at another shop, but she used to get her meds at our shop, and she was completely like black and blue face. Like beat, she got their place got robbed, and she got shit beaten out of her, like bad. Like it was a really pretty girl too, and just to see like. I didn't know that she worked at a shop or anything. I just remember seeing her, and she was coming in, and she told the story to one of the other colleagues there. And when he told me the story after, I was like, whoa. Like, I mean, she looked like she was, like, thrown down a flight of stairs.
Wow. Well, I'm curious where you stand on this one, Sam. As a dispensary owner, and you told us that, you know, you've been robbed on live on camera before. And, I mean, where do you stand? Do you prefer an armed... Or do you just like security doors and, you know, a quick trigger to call 911?
All of those collectively. I mean, my robbery was after hours. It was completely by happenstance. I was in my shop. We went close at 8 o'clock. We went across the street to have dinner. We came back to grab something out of my office. And as we walk in and turn off the alarm, walk through the front door, burglars who didn't know that we walked in the front door broke in our back door.
Oh, jeez.
So as we're sitting in my office, I'm like, what is that noise? And I turn on the security cameras. There's people in my store that we don't know walking towards my office after. And we're like, ah. So we call 911. And by the time the cops were there, and it was like all the news media had shown up. And so as the police are doing their activity, it's all being recorded and all made. It's all over the news. It was wild.
Oh, wow.
So they got the guys.
So you believe a gentle mixture of everything.
A gentle mixture of everything. I think if it's just weed, you can always grow more. And if you have that kind of business that you're operating, that you're in fear of being robbed, then you're doing something different. There's no
right. Like if you're, like you said, transparency. You have bank accounts. Your cash is safe. You're not having like all your eggs in one basket.
Well, I mean that was the other thing that I've heard that was brought up where someone said, you know what. You can always grow more weed. You know, you're not keeping all your cash there.
Right.
And if you have an armed security guard, if God forbid somebody comes in, the last thing you want is them shooting while you have patients there.
Right, of course.
That would be worse. So it's almost like, you know, take what you're here to take, and we're going to call the cops and leave, and then it's between you and them.
Right.
And, you know, don't get in the way. But, you know, I still don't know where I stand on this one. This is one that I really look for others to try and sway me, but I haven't heard the argument makes me go one way or another.
There are standards of operation that make you more of a target than others. Like these dispensaries that you've referenced that have just trash bags full of marijuana are a good target for robbery because chances are their money is handled in the same fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be very loose about it. And robbing a place like that's going to be very simple. Whereas some place that's very organized and tight and clean and runs fluidly is going to have money on credit cards gets directly deposited into the banks. They're going to have immediate transactions that go directly to the bank. Things that it's not going to be loose things just hanging out everywhere.
Yeah, you're not going to find a bag of cash sitting in the back room. Right.
No, this is not going to happen. So really it depends on the operating – how these dispensaries operate, who's operating the dispensary.
Great. Like I was saying earlier, Grateful Meds in Hollywood, they got robbed. And they're giving away a reward on Instagram for like a half P to whoever had information on who, you know, and they have pictures of the people.
I mean,
that's the thing that I don't understand is like they have the pictures of the people that must have been after hours because you have to get their information in order for them to enter the building.
Right.
So
yeah.
So the chances of somebody coming in, you know, I guess, how are they going to get that? You have to have good computer system, I guess, too. But how – I mean, it's stored in there. You check people in. The computer – if it's backed up, then they can't grab their file and erase it.
Old iron lungs, Sam Hamid. Yeah. Look at that.
You've got a – I mean, you've got their picture and you've got their information, unless they're using fake information. Most of the time, it seems like it's after hours.
Yeah. That definitely seems to be a majority of the robberies are after hours. It doesn't seem to be people brazenly right. just walking in with guns, holding them up like people have held up liquor stores in the past.
You know, most of these operations have multiple doors and hallways and buzzer doors yeah. to get through first. And it's much like a doctor's office.
Yeah, the interesting thing is it seems like merely having an organized merely having a look of organization mm-hmm. is sometimes enough of a deterrent.
Absolutely.
You know, like you said, if it looks like a shop that isn't handling everything very well and everyone's kind of all over each other, it's an easy store to knock off.
Absolutely.
It's kind of easy. You walk in.
Pharmacies don't have armed guards, and they're prescription drugs that are street value, the Oxys, the Vicodin, things of that, are of the same value, if not more valuable, than marijuana. And they're not in risk of being robbed because they're operated very cleanly. You're not going to find pills just laying around everywhere in a pharmacy. It's just right. not going to happen. Yeah.
And then back in 2006, when I first got my card, my good friend worked at a doctor's office, and she got robbed at gunpoint at the doctor's office because that was when the doctor's offices were like packed.
So a lot of it was cash though.
Yeah, but man. I'm like, how much could you have had that? Like, you know, she said it was like Asian gangsters or something. It was down in Long Beach.
Well, I mean, if you come at the end of the day and, you know, 500 people or 100 people walk through
grand.
Even in a day.
They got a couple grand.
Yeah, that's 4 grand right there.
I guess maybe they must have thought they were going to get more. Maybe, because that doesn't...
You never know.
To me, that doesn't seem like a lot of money to have to pull a gun on a little girl.
There's a lot. There's not much amounts of money that would make me pull a gun on people. So you don't know what these people are thinking.
That's just my reason.
Because I realize, I go, how much would it take for me to pull a gun on a little child?
Not a little child, but she's a young. I mean, she's a short,
just
female.
Give me the lollipop, kid.
She was pretty traumatized.
Give me the juju bees, or I will fucking shoot you right in your fucking face. I swear to God. I swear to God, kid.
I shouldn't laugh at that.
It's okay. It's okay. No judgment. Don't you dare blame it. Don't blame it on anything.
I'm unabashedly stoned right now.
You know, that is – by the way, Sam just got written up in the New York Post, was it?
New York Times.
Or New York Times. Woo. Woohoo. Go check it out. So you were telling us about this. So the reporter called you unabashedly stoned.
Right.
Did they – I mean – it's kind of a – I'm guessing he meant it as an insult.
He was, but there's no such thing as bad press, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's very true.
And what was it regarding?
I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with a woman named Cheryl Schumann.
Yes.
All right. She's she calls herself the Martha Stewart of marijuana.
Yes.
Whether you agree with that or not.
Mm.
Anyhow, through business acquaintanceship, I was the supplier for her Beverly Hills Cannabis Club marijuana tasting party.
Okay.
Where a lot of the local...
That sounds delicious.
...television network or movie executives had gotten together to meet with Cheryl and to pitch her reality show or some shit. I have no idea. Anyhow, so the New York Times reporter is following her through her thing, and I'm like, this is like the least serious thing I've ever been involved in. So I didn't put any... like, I said, whatever, great. New York Times is coming. And I was just wasted. Probably ate one of my brownies, and he was like, okay, let's go. Let's stock some weed. And when the lawyers called to do the fact checking, if you will, they're like, they said that you were pretty high. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty high. I wasn't going to deny it. I was like, yeah, I was pretty high.
Yeah, I was pretty ripped up.
Yeah.
Tore up from the floor up, if you will.
So the reporter mentioned that he walks into the store and the first thing he notices that this incredible smell of marijuana coming out of the store. Well,
No shit.
It's a dispensary.
It's a dope store.
Yeah. God damn it.
There's product on the shelf and there's a two grow rooms that you walk through to get two.
Fucking reeks of weed in here.
Right? Oh my God. If it smelled like clean linen in there, I'd be like, this isn't, what the fuck's going on? This is weird. This is, no, this is not good. Don't like this. But okay, so he complained about the fact that it even smelled, oh gosh.
Right. He recognized whatever she was doing to be totally.
You know what? It's that weird thing though, where it's that weird right wing press,
right?
And right. I mean, you know, we talked last week about Nancy. You know what, Nancy? I'm not even talking about her, but Nancy Grace.
Nancy Grace.
The debate that she got into with Mr. Chines and then Dr. Drew, and just this whole idea of the fact that. It's sensationalism media,
right?
Where they go, I know what I can say to rile up a certain group of people.
Of course.
And I'm going to say it, facts be damned.
I don't want my babysitter smoking.
Well, the topic is hot, and everybody's rah-rah pro-weed right now. Everybody is. Yeah, so somebody has to go against the grain.
Well, it's that weird because they're the ridiculously far right, the Libertarian Party, is also a party that's pushing marijuana reform because they don't believe anything should be regulated in the United States of America. And then you have the far left, which is pushing for legalization because, you know, they like legalization.
Right.
And it's weird that those fucking two hippies. Places of – yeah, because of fucking hippies.
And the conservatives are for it because of the tax money that's potentially
absolutely.
There.
Well, that was the other thing. You know, in Texas, you know, they don't even want to deal with medical. They're like, just give us recreational. If we're going to legalize it, let's just –
right.
Let's take it, let's tax it, and let's give the money to the state. And
yeah, the Houston police chief, he was like, yeah, prohibition has failed.
Yeah, you know, when you have the police chief of a large city in Houston going on record saying marijuana prohibition failed.
Right.
We've made the problem worse, if anything. We're not looking for marijuana anymore.
Right.
And I mean, I know I have
unless you're flying with 3 pounds across the country. Well, flying to Texas. Did you hear about that story? The guy from San Francisco is flying from San Francisco to Dallas with 3 pounds of weed on him. He just got convicted.
But see, that's just a bad idea.
But he needed it for medical purposes.
Well,
a lot of glaucoma. In Texas.
Oh no! Well, how long was he planning on staying there for a year?
I don't know.
Actually, I don't know. 3 pounds.
I smoke an eighth a day, so I don't know. It's I'll go through a pound pretty quick.
I can't think of anywhere that I would go where I would have to bring 3 pounds with me. I can't think of anywhere I'd be that long that I'd have to bring 3 pounds. I mean, that was – we talked about the craziest transports earlier. I think my favorite one that we saw – our two favorite – was one of them was a jukebox someone had ripped the guts out of and filled with marijuana. I'm like, that was a perfectly good jukebox.
Right.
You just ruined. And the other one was this old lady who thought she was getting a TV delivered, and she opened up her 55-inch flat screen television box to find like 30 pounds of marijuana.
Oh my God. Hallelujah.
It was like the squished kind, though.
I would have 15 TVs the following day. What is she complaining about?
She called the cops like an idiot.
Oh, my God.
I think she was in, like, South Dakota. She wouldn't know any better. That's the problem, you know? It's like you get into these flyover states, and they're, you know, that's – although now that is changing, too, with the whole, industrial hemp movement that's going as well now.
Yeah.
That a lot of these flyover states, what's getting them is not so much medical cannabis, but industrial hemp. the fact that they can grow something that they can harvest every year.
Yes.
And it grows in cold weather, hot weather, humidity, dryness. It grows like, oh, but I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. A weed.
Ah.
It grows like a fucking weed. It grows very fast and very strong. And you hear about loggers down in the South who are like, I don't want to go onto these people's properties and cut down their trees because they can't grow those trees back for 70 years.
Right.
I'll never be able to pay them for trees again. But if they had hemp, well, shit, I could harvest their hemp every year.
Right.
Yeah. The only thing is that they don't care about whether it's male or female. So when growing hemp, that's why there hasn't been a lot of industrial hemp in California in the past. That's why I think Schwarzenegger was always vetoing the hemp bill because he likes to smoke. That's just a theory.
Yeah, it is. My favorite was. Did you ever see his facts. Documentary? Either one of you that one when he
pumping
was
iron.
Pumping iron when he was the weightlifting guy when he smoked at the end when he's like, I earn this. I can smoke this because I earn it. Yeah. He was. I mean, listen. I'm not a huge Schwarzenegger fan, but if anything, I learned so much about how to trash talk people from that documentary. When he walks up next to that guy, and the guy's doing push-ups right before he has to go out and flex for these people, and Arnold gets down, and he's like, "Oh, you're working out good. I'll work out with you. I do it with one arm. It's fine. I know you need two. It's okay. Don't worry." And he's just. With this guy, and he's going up to these other guys. He's going, "Oh, you're looking good. You're in the junior division, right, this year? Yeah, you'll probably win the juniors. You're muscular. You're looking great." And I'm like, "Oh, you're just terrible. You are so awful, Darty." And this is the man that ran and won governor of the state that we live in.
Right?
Oh, my gosh.
When are we going to have a cage match between him and Jesse Ventura?
I would
want to see that.
Oh,
so
gosh.
To see that.
Oh, my God. Republican blood will spill. Oh, gosh. It'll be so good.
Yeah.
It'll be so good.
You ever seen walruses like slap each other in National Geographic? It'll look a lot like that.
Oh, Lord. Oh, that is too funny.
That's the visual.
Oh, my gosh.
My money's on Arnold.
Yeah, my money would have to be on Arnold. I think Jesse's just gotten too darn old.
I mean, they're both actors, great actors.
But you're talking about the body.
Yeah.
Jesse, the body Ventura, when you refer to
it. You put Jesse back in a boa. You'll be surprised what that man can do.
Yeah, okay. He's out of office now, though, isn't he? He got voted out a while ago, I feel like.
He's done with the United States. He lives in Mexico most of the time.
Oh, jeez. He was another big old Republican, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got burnt by his party pretty good, though.
Well, that'll tend to happen. I mean,
radical.
The Republican Party is weird. That, you know, now he would fit in really well because I know he was kind of – he was one of those early, early Tea Party thinkers that was going on that – you know, thankfully now the Republican movement is moving away from the Tea Party and letting them be viewed as their own separate entity.
Right.
I've always said there are parts of the Republican Party I can get on board with. I understand, I understand the idea of being a little fiscally conservative, but, you know, socially liberal, man. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. I just, you know, it's what I always have been. But that being said, there are members of the Republican Party now who believe – you know, I'm for gay marriage. I'm for medicinal marijuana. I just believe in cutting taxes to businesses so that they can spend more money on their employees.
Yeah.
And I say, well, as long as you're okay with government regulation to make sure they spend that money on their employees, I'll cut your taxes. Fine. Fuck it. Let's spend more money. Let's give money to people. You know,
it's companies don't see it that way, though. The money saved doesn't go back to the employees. It rarely ever does.
Well, that is always the weird political in between that goes on in that. And, you know, where I've had my hard time when I was figuring out my political beliefs was going, you know, ethically, there are a lot of things that I believe in that could line up very Republican. But the problem is that I believe in enforcing those things, which makes me a fucking blood-sucking liberal, I guess. It's the weird thing about that. It's like as soon as you're like, but I'm going to force you to do these things, you're like, you fucking liberal son of a bitch. You blue-blooded liberal motherfucker. I'm a red-blooded American. You just give me rules and believe that I'll follow them, goddammit. I don't get it. The most backwards place I ever went was the state of Texas. I walked into their state capitol. They had two lines. They had the regular metal detector line, and then they had their open carry line. Because you're allowed to carry a gun into the state capitol. And I watched a man walk through wearing a suit into the open carry line, you know, open his jacket up, showed his gun. They pulled it out. He walked through the metal detector. He beeped. They checked his pockets. He had a little knife in his back pocket. They took his knife and then gave him his gun. Have a good day. Have a nice day at the capitol, sir. You cannot have that knife in here, but take your gun.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's that backwards thinking that I say. Like, I get the theory, but the execution is fucking throwing me all through a tizzy. That's when I start getting all kinds of confused. Well, we still have one more thing left to talk about. So these Zazz pot. Okay, here's the thing. You showed me an article saying that the first pot vending machine is coming out in Washington, and both of you said exactly the same thing at the same time. Which was what did you say, Sam?
Is it a med box? Medbox.
So what was Medbox then? And
Medbox was the original vending machine.
NBC, you got it wrong.
Yeah, way wrong.
Super wrong. Check your facts. Call me next time. I'll tell you.
You know that.
Wrong.
Here's the thing. As far as news media is covering anything that involves marijuana, I don't know if they're guessing or if they're going off of, you know, Bill Romanowski 1980s numbers.
Oh, they're totally guessing.
Or stuff like that. When we went over the story about the craziest ways the pot had been transported, they'd snapped open that jukebox, which they said was like 10 pounds, that they valued at like $300,000. Then they popped open the lady who had like 30, 40 pounds, and that was valued at $100,000. I'm like, how are we?
Wow.
I'm so
are confused. We just not even fact checking our numbers here? No. Or are we just like, tell them it's worth six figures. Who gives a fuck?
Right?
Who cares? They won't check.
So this is it's NBC News, and it's like marijuana's first pot vending machines dispense weed. It's like in Seattle, and it's called Zazz. With three
Z-A-Z-Z-Z.
Yeah. And then basically they said vending machines appeared for the first time in Colorado last year. So how can that be? That's like just – that's misleading clickbait.
Yeah. It's misleading clickbait. Misleading clickbait. There you go.
Right? I just – because then it's like as you read down the article, it's like, oh, no, there was one in Colorado. But no, the first one was Medbox. And Medbox, they moved to Arizona or they're done now?
I don't even know what's happened to Medbox.
I think they're done now.
I heard they got sued. I don't know too much about that.
Well, that'll usually happen if you bring, you know, anything marijuana related into Arizona.
They were a publicly traded company. They were mentioned on CBS, I think, and some in passing about Medbox, and their stock skyrocketed. A lot of people made a lot of money. And
then just went nowhere with it. And then
went up in smoke, if you will.
Well, that's no pun. It's that weird thing where
I search Medbox and then the next search comes up automatically says Medbox stock. I'm gonna click on it.
Well, it's that weird thing where marijuana,
that hurts. Yes. It's like looking at a slide.
Oh no! Oh, is it really? Is it straight tanked it's, off? Oh man, it's that weird thing though where that marijuana being covered in mainstream media at all seems to be a lot of guesswork and a lot. It's very rare that I see. I guess the weird thing is that the only time I've seen Dr. Drew on a news program talking about marijuana, it was Nancy Fuck Grace. And that's not even a news program. I'm using that term lightly.
Yes.
I don't get to see this conversation happen in a real world news organization that is viewed and hear real facts being talked about. I got to turn on ESPN, and when they're talking about marijuana, they have Bill Romanowski on saying that it's – I think he said it's 200% more carcinogenic than tobacco, 500% more addictive. I mean, he's throwing out stats that – are reefer madness stats.
Absolutely.
And
I want to see the test results. But where there's no testing going on because it's
schedule. We only are finally the Children's Hospital in Colorado said that they're finally going to start doing medical testing.
Yeah, there's with a lot marijuana. Of new research coming out now. People are no longer waiting for.
Well, the most interesting one that I found out was the kids were not being affected. We always thought that when they were younger that we had to treat them with the high CBD, low THC.
Yes.
And recently they found out that if you ease them into it, the THC doesn't affect them.
Yeah.
And they're really fine. And then we just had the good Dr. Cross in here who taught us all about THCA.
Yes. The acid form cannabis juicing?
There were a couple different ways that she taught us about it, but I do know that was one of them.
It's a Kief tincture.
Very nice.
See, there you go.
And if you're aging pets, just get the raw plant. Before week 7, chop it down, freeze it, and just give little pieces to your dogs.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It'll help with all the pain and the ease and the hip and everything. Oh, my dogs love it.
You know, I've been wondering about that because I've had a lot. I have a friend who I introduced to the medical community who I took to your shop as soon as he got his card.
Thank you.
And one of the first questions that he asked about was about using stuff for his dog, because he has a dog who has terrible, terrible arthritis in her hips.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The topical stuff would be great.
Well, yeah, he was using, I think, some kind of emu oil or something like that.
Right. Emu oil is fantastic.
That he was putting a ring on the dog so she wouldn't lick it up because, you know, the aim is not, I guess, to get your dog high, but just to use the plant for its medical benefits here.
Yes. And
I had patients that used to tell us, you know, that they were giving the edibles to their dogs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if it helps and it makes them feel better, because I know that especially for older, bigger dogs, those hip issues can and if you can make them comfortable, their ability to move around and run around and play and all that
not even just a
adds
issue.
Years on their lives.
Oh, totally.
Just the fact that they're able to move around and they're not being stricken down by this. So young plant, you freeze it,
and you
huh?
See, and then have you seen like animals even with the glaucoma too?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, in nature, our biggest problem growing outdoors, one of the issues is deer coming by and just grazing off your plants, and they need it as part of their normal diet.
Oh, they will fuck your shit up.
My dogs used to eat my plants all the time, and it made sense. So now that I have control over what they're taking or intaking, it's working out well. And even for my smallest dog, who's not aging, having aging issues, he has a respiratory issue for some reason. That tells me I need to put my dog on some steroid pill for the rest of his life. No. I'm like, no.
That's only going to create other problems in its health as well.
Yeah, within a few weeks of feeding him the cannabis leaves raw, same thing as dosing appropriately to his size, his bronchitis is gone. And now he has productive mucus, like he just blows out snots instead of suffocating and having some sort of wheezing thing. Yeah, it's just from eating the marijuana.
I mean, listen, the healing qualities of anything else that I've learned about in the past few years. What I got to see in front of my own eyes with Rick Simpson honey oil and what it did for my rugby coach when he had a benign growth on his back. He had paralysis on half his face, and after a few months of treatment, I think he had a little bit of numbness under his eye, but other than that, gained full use of his face back. He didn't have to take his prostate medication anymore.
And he took it orally?
Yes, he was taking it orally. He had a little bit of trouble because he was, you know, a professional athlete for a lot of his life, so his body was a temple, and taking the Rick Simpson oil, as you know, it is a very, very high concentration. So it gave him the spins, something wicked, but it got the job done. He sees Eddie just take it at night before he went to bed, has some crazy dreams, and then usually by the morning he's still had a little bit of the wobbliness going on. But for what it did for him and obviously the years that it added on to his life.
When's the last time he's been to an oncologist?
He's living in Oklahoma City now. I know that he actually was just hospitalized for something else, but he's out and fine and recovering and happy and healthy. Yeah, I mean, listen, I never would have – I remember when I was on the Canna News.
Oh, Canna News, yeah.
Canna News, and Rick Simpson honey oil was one of the subjects we talked about, and I came in and I knew nothing. And when you guys described it to me, I'm like, this sounds like your snake oil salesman.
Oh, yeah.
So you did his show?
I did his show. I was on one of the first three episodes of it, I believe.
Yeah.
It was an abomination, too. It was directed by celebrities. I can't say who. And it was the first time we did the show. And we figured since nobody was really – Alex was the professional and it was me. And then everybody else was sort of never really been on television before.
Oh, shit.
So we figured we'd start it easy, smoke real weed and really cloud the place up and yada, yada. And progressively get into more deeper subjects. So – in the beginning, we talked about very light stuff and how to use a vaporizer and whatnot, and we were all getting very giddy and stoned. By the time we reach episode 4, we're discussing Rick Simpson oil and cancer, and it's like 2 in the morning. And I'm so high.
Yeah.
And I look at – and I'm like, hey, this is Sam Humid, and I don't even know where I am. These people are, and we're discussing cancer.
Yeah.
My
first time podcasting, I do another podcast called The Session sometimes, and – it's like the same thing. We keep smoking. My friend makes edibles. We're just eating edibles, and you get hungry, so you just eat more edibles, and hours go by.
The problem are the edibles are delicious, and you're like, oh,
this is. We record for like 3 hours that day, I think, and by the end, I always try at least when we're doing this because it's like the 20-minute mark we smoke or something. So it's like, okay. I try to get the smart stuff out at the beginning. Because towards the end, I'm just like,
I think there's one of the episodes where my sound department. Sound department forgot to plug things in. They were all smoking. Everybody was smoking weed.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was smoking weed. But I remember sitting there, and you guys were. And the weird thing was, I was the only person on this panel, because the panels changed a little bit in between episodes. But on this panel, I was the only person who had just never heard of Rick Simpson.
Oh, right. Rick Simpson was what we're talking about.
And so everybody is telling me about this stuff, and I'm like, okay.
Right.
So it cures everything? And they're like, yeah, pretty much. It cures everything. I'm like, everything? Yeah. Like, it'll shrink tumors? I'm like, okay, sure. And then I found out about my coach, and I wasn't even the one who suggested it to him. It was another rugby player who suggested it. And got him to the doctor so we can get his prescription. And I mean, it was amazing. We're not even talking about months. We're talking about weeks.
Yes.
That you saw these effects.
Yes.
It's the first snake oil that works, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
On the cannabinoids, there's the thing we have as my scientist. He's a real scientist. We discussed the making of Rick Simpson oil, whether or not it's safe. And the biggest problem as a distributor of products in the marijuana industry, there are a lot of fly-by-night people who are like, I made this. It's Rick Simpson oil, quote unquote. It's going to save things.
Rick Simpson went on record recently being like, if I don't make it, technically it's not really Rick Simpson honey oil.
Then it's cannabis oil, but it's usually, hopefully, an ethanol wash.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's
iso. I prefer an isopropyl, a 90% isopropyl wash is the easiest for me.
Yeah, 90%.
But you were saying with your scientist.
But with the scientist, Gabe Green, was discussing, was very clear that there's a lot of people who are making these things. They're using some sort of solvents. They're not always the most pure.
Like naphtha?
Yeah, or any of the benzene-based solvents.
Okay.
So those are carcinogenic.
Like a benzopropanol or something.
Right. So we were trying to be very objective about the whole thing. Like, just be careful what you're doing. If you don't trust who you're buying it from, make your own kind of thing. Because there's no way to trust what was happening. And I wouldn't carry it in perennial because I had real people who were suffering from cancer saying, I need this. Where? How do I get this? And I'm like, well, there's assholes walking into my shop every day claiming that they have it.
Yeah, but if they're making it from trim, you don't know that they're making it from whole flowers. Were those flowers that they made it from sick or were they healthy? You know, because a lot of times when people turn things into concentrates, it's because the flowers didn't come out that good.
Right, there's mold on them. There's spider mite infestations. All the reasons that they would try to concentrate something is what they would do it for. I'm about to actually make a batch of Rick Simpson oil myself for a patient who's going through stage 4 cancers. And my combination therapy, I'll release the recipe, is a strain called Phyllis Diller, which you love.
I do love Phyllis Diller very much.
It's 27% THC, super, super high THC strain. Add that in with our AC/DC strain, which is a 24-1% CBD versus THC strain at a 2/3-1/3 ratio. So you have all the medical properties of the THC to attack the cancer cells and to start apoptosis, which is the programmed cell death of cancer cells. But then you have all the medical benefit of the CBGs and the CBDs and everything else to work as a cleansing mechanism to release the body of all of the toxins that the THC just destroyed. So it works part and parcel with one another. The recipes of just pure THC or pure CBD are great, but you need to have that blending.
It's all complementary.
Absolutely.
I mean, well, that's what I found out recently. I always used to be the one who thought that, you know, oh, THC is the fun stuff and CBD is the medical stuff. And that was one of the first things in here that I was kind of immediately educated to was, no, THC has its own medical benefits that are separate completely from the medical benefits of CBD, which are completely separate of the medical benefits of, what is it, CBG, is it?
Yes.
I mean, THCA, THCV. I mean, but you notice that it happens not just with cannabis, but whenever you zero in on one little thing and then maybe even synthesize that one little thing, that's where addiction comes from. Like, Valium is made from valerian, like, you know.
Yeah,
got something you'll be addicted to. I'm about to make a brownie that's infused with just THCV, which is a appetite suppressant. So you'll be able to eat a chocolate and lose weight.
We were talking about this last week. Okay, you know,
what's your face?
I love
you. How about that? Like, you can lose weight from eating chocolate.
I don't even think we got into THCV last week, but we were going to talk about it. Was that?
That's the super psychedelic
Bethany
one, too.
Bethany Frankel,
right?
You know Bethany Frankel? She's going to come out. She's trying to work on a strain that is supposed to, you know, have low munchies. I knew when I was reading that they were talking about THCV because it's it's not recommended for people with anorexia problems because it will not make you hungry.
Wow,
which is
that
what
is
I
crazy.
Need because it makes me so fiercely hungry.
That is crazy. Well, this has been an awesome episode. I've had a darn good time out here. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam.
I'm a pleasure to be on here.
Please tell these people who listen where they can catch the Canna News. And if you speak Spanish as well.
So cannabinews.com, CannabiNews.com. They'll take you to the links for all our Facebook page and whatnot. The site's being rebuilt as we speak. And then Canamundo, CannaMundo.
Canamundo.com.
Is the Spanish version of it. A very highbrow.
Fucking awesome.
The Spanish Donnie Marie talk about everything from legalization in Uruguay to what a dispensary should look like.
We talked about Uruguay a couple months ago.
Spain's on the forefront of medical marijuana research.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot happening in the Latin American community, and it's still very, very hush-hush. So I'm the gringo trying to break that mold and bring it to the world.
Arriba, arriba.
I love it.
Are you going to be at the High Times Cup this weekend?
No. I've towed a very strict medicinal line for a long time. I've never really gotten involved in the whole social campaign of medical marijuana, of the marijuana culture.
I understand, yeah.
But I believe in the next
Sam
year,
is so. Our respectable man in a suit who represents us very, very well.
Absolutely. I'm going to be with the Honeypot team we have a booth there and it's for marketing, but I mean, Ken Est has a booth there. You can get some good genetics there. It's definitely more commercialized than say the Emerald Cup. Or, you know.
Well, I think I'm progressively more involved in the political aspects of things and do more of these county tours and do less focus on the dispensary work. I'll be at these events because that's where our voter base is at. Yeah. Grassroots efforts come from these people.
And absolutely.
When they speak, the politicians listen.
And then, you know, if you have any good, like, you know, water-based solvents or, solventless, they say.
I just use water hash.
Water hash, yeah. But they have competition for
my brownie.
They call it solventless, but it's kind of like water's technically a solvent, but it's just not a chemical solvent. But ice wax or some cool stuff like that.
My brownie needs to go in at some point.
Absolutely.
It's
the most incredible thing outside of the space cake in Amsterdam.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And I'm not gloating. My face is on the label.
It is. It's very awesome.
I expect to see it. Well, that's where I'll be, guys.
Well,
where are you going to be,
guys.
Alex?
I'm going to be in Reno. this wonderful Valentine's weekend. I'm going to be up in Reno at the Pioneer Underground doing the Dismantled Tour.
Yay.
With Justin Ruppel, Reverend Mitch, and Joe Dosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Tripping balls.
It'll be a tripping balls. Tripping serious balls.
Road tripping balls.
Road tripping balls. And, it'll be fun. Thank you guys for listening. We are the Cantalinguists. I'm Alex Mandelberg.
Crab diving.
Thank you, Crab Diving Network. And thank you, Sam Hamid. You guys have a good night.
You.